from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. The Oakland City Council voted early this morning 7-1 to hire Bill Bratton as a crime consultant. Bratton used to head the Los Angeles and New York police departments, where he saw double-digit reductions in crime during his tenure. While his stop-and-frisk and zero-tolerance policies have been controversial, officials are hoping his expertise can reverse Oakland's rise in violence. What about consulting to the Oakland police, and will it have success? We'll talk about it next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Oakland is the most violent city in the state of California. With lower numbers of police and higher crime and violence rates, the city has been looking for solutions. Last night, a large crowd was present at an Oakland City Council meeting that was to decide whether to hire William Bratton, former New York and L.A. police chief, as a consultant. At 2 in the morning, the council voted 7-1 in favor of hiring Bratton. And Bratton has a track record of crime reduction in both New York and Los Angeles in double digits. But there have been protests against him because of his having implemented such policies as stop and frisk and zero tolerance. The contract calls for $250,000 for Bratton and Associates to design and implement strategies to reduce crime in Oakland. In this morning's opening forum hour, we focus in on last night's Oakland City Council meeting and what can be done about crime and violence in the East Bay City. Joining us first to talk about this is Mathai Kuruvilla, who is a staff writer covering Oakland City Hall. He's with the San Francisco Chronicle. Mathai Kuruvilla, good to have you on Forum. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Well, this was, first of all, something that came about, we should mention, after 9 hours of meeting and 4 hours of public comment. But for the most part, it was, a pretty spirited debate and civil.
Yeah, it was very spirited and it was very civil. And part of the concern of the Oakland City Council was that it would get out of hand with too many police critics. So they actually tried to stack the deck, and the City Council and the City Council President, Pat Kernahan, made a concerted effort to get citizens she thought would be more supportive of police into the chambers. And sure enough, we had the front rows of the chambers were filled with pastors from local churches, many representing historically black churches, and they packed the main floor and many of the galleries, and it certainly changed the tone of the meeting.
Well, in previous meetings, there had been a good deal of booing and hissing and all kinds of loud noise, so things quieted down because of, as you say, the deck being stacked somewhat?
Absolutely, and it had a pretty big impact. As the night wore on, of course, more of the churchgoers, so to speak, left, and the chambers were more filled with police critics, and so the tone changed a little bit. But still, for the most part, it was a very civil and spirited debate, for sure.
Well, this was certainly something that Mayor Kwan was behind, Chief Jordan, the city manager, so one can presume this was a political victory in that sense, but there were those who were protesting largely based on money that had been sort of spent ineffectually in the past and also how the money could have been better used?
Absolutely. I mean, the police department is in a position of tremendous focus right now. You've got a federal judge who's looking into it. There's a federal monitor who looks over it. There are We have a rising crime rate in a city that's already got the highest violent crime rate in the state. And so you have this department that's in the crosshairs, so to speak, and the mayor, Gene Kwan, and others are under a lot of pressure to show they're making change. And it was a very critical vote in that regard.
Well, in terms of the arguments against the Bratton contract, I know a lot of it, as I suggested, went back to the fact that the Oakland PD had spent about 2 $1 million on technology that was either underused or not used at all, and over $1 million on policing consultants just back in 2012. And this is also a contract for only 6 months. But we heard a lot about stop and frisk, and that wasn't even on the table, was it?
It wasn't on the table, and that's part of what's so interesting is this was clearly the biggest concern for many of the activists. They felt like this policy that Bratton had been implemented in New York would come to Oakland. What's striking, however, is that stop and frisk as a concept is decades old, if not more. The Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, has affirmed the practice in 1968. So it's a pretty standard practice in many departments around the country. What Bratton did in New York, however, was different in that he had an expanded and much more aggressive form of it. But some of those distinctions get lost in the debate, and many people were opposed to stop and frisk being used in Oakland when, in fact, it's pretty clear that it happens already.
Based on what you heard in testimony yesterday?
Stop and frisk is what you, the way it works is if an officer has reasonable suspicion to believe that a crime has been committed, he can stop someone. Now, that was affirmed in Terry versus Ohio in 1968 by the U.S. Supreme Court. If the officer believes that the person they've stopped is also armed and dangerous, then they can also pat them down. Now, they can't frisk them. They can't put their hands in their pockets, but they can pat them down. That's stop and frisk. That's protected by the U.S. Supreme Court. What happened in New York, however, civil rights attorneys will tell you, is that the officers who did it were under pressure to do more. They were violating the rights of those they were stopping, and the ways they were stopping people didn't constitute reasonable suspicion. They were just rounding up large numbers of people who weren't who they didn't have reasonable suspicion for. So, we know Oakland police will tell you that this is a practice that happens in Oakland.
And zero tolerance was also a major concern.
Yes, that too is a major concern, though that was less discussed by the activists last night and what form that would take. But yes, a very aggressive form of policing that would saturate particular neighborhoods and particular communities in Oakland, which is what happened in New York, that obviously wouldn't fly in Oakland. And there's no indication that that's what would take place or that's what Bratton would do, but that's certainly the concern.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us. Methai Kuruvilla, who is a staff writer covering Oakland City Hall for the San Francisco Chronicle and who gave us a very good picture of what happened last night, the result, a 7-1 vote in favor of the six-month contract, $250,000 six-month contract for former New York and L.A. police head Anthony Bratton to come aboard and try to remedy the problems that plague Oakland. Let me tell you who else we've assembled for this hour. We want to welcome, first of all, Anthony Toribio, who is Assistant Chief of the Oakland Police Department. District includes the area covered by the injunction. And Chief Toribio, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Good morning, sir, and thank you for having me on your show this morning.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Noel Gallo, who is a councilman and head of the Public Safety Committee for the Oakland City Council.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you for allowing me to be with you.
Good to have you. And we also want to welcome here in studio Rachel Herzing, who is co-director of the Critical Resistance and Oakland Group, which was opposed to the hiring of Bill Bratton. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about your opposition, particularly in light of the fact that Bratton's track record includes tackling some pretty serious problems and actually getting all kinds of kudos for lessening complaints and doing well on civil liberties and all that?
Yeah, I think for us the main concern is trying to figure out what the trade-offs are. So if you drive down crime rates through really aggressive, hyper-aggressive, some would say, policing practices, what are the long-term impacts of that? And really our message was to the city council and to the police department, what are the long-term solutions? If you bring this man on, who, although the city says it doesn't want to use any zero-tolerance policing, it won't condone racial profiling, it won't use stop and frisk, it has ineffectively tried to use gang injunctions, this man is synonymous with these things. And so we wondered, why is he suitable for this contract? Why is he suitable for the Oakland Police Department when consistently the community is saying that it wants an investment in its health and well-being rather than continual suppression by police forces?
There has, like I say, though, been a track record which includes tackling massive civil liberty breaches in Los Angeles. I mean, he's got a track record that has better relations with minority communities, both in L.A. and New York.
Yeah, I think in L.A., for example, the compliance with the federal consent decree is somewhat controversial. Again, I think there are some communities there that would say he actually fractured community relations more substantially. So I think if you look at which communities he's allying himself with, which communities he's consulting, you'll see across the board that it's also not the people who are the most targeted by his very policies.
So, I understand you must be disappointed at the decision. Did you feel it was a fair debate, though?
I thought it was a great debate. I thought it was a very, very lively meeting with very impassioned reasoning and arguments on all sides. And I actually was very excited to see so many people out. I think Mathai is right that Councilperson Kernahan, for instance, tried to stack the deck. I'm not sure how effective that was, but I think it did probably, despite her best efforts, create the circus environment she was trying to avoid. But in turn, I think it also generated a much more rich discussion than we've seen for a while. And I'm very enthusiastic about Oaklanders coming out and speaking their minds.
Well, will protests continue, though? I mean, you're going to monitor what's going to be put in place here and possibly protest, maybe even continue the protests that have been going on?
Well, I mean, Critical Resistance is an organization that's a national organization. So we have a chapter in New York, we have a chapter in Los Angeles. And part of our concern about this contract was seeing the track record of Breton, but from a different perspective, not from the city leadership, not from the leadership of police departments, but from the people who have been most impacted by zero tolerance policing, most impacted by stop and frisk. So I think, yeah, definitely we'll continue to monitor him. We'll continue to pay attention. We'll continue to object to that style of policing. I think Mathai is right. That kind of policing already happens in Oakland. And I think the consideration for us is, if that policing is already happening and the community is against it, why would you exacerbate that further?
Rachel Herzig, again with us in studio, co-directs Critical Resistance, an Oakland group, nationally, she said, but Oakland-based, as well opposed to the hiring of Bill Breton. Let me bring Assistant Chief Toribio into this. He's Assistant Chief of the Oakland Police Department. And Assistant Chief, actually, I'd like you to hear Chief Jordan talking about stop and frisk. Last night, there was much objection, as I'm sure you're well aware, to the support of aggressive tactics of that sort. And here's Chief Jordan promising police will respect residents' rights.
There's been no talk or no discussions in the department about stop and frisk. I do not support it, nor am I going to condone it. We will not allow officers to do that. We will practice constitutional policing, stopping people based on reasonable suspicion.
Well, Assistant Chief Toribio, that pretty much spells it out. How much can folks in Oakland really rely upon the word of the chief here, or your word for that matter?
Well, the bottom line is this, that racial profiling and zero tolerance policies are either illegal or something that we don't advocate in either our policies and our training. And that, as the chief mentioned last night, is not something that we have talked to our consultants about. Our focus has been looking at the department in terms of how we are fighting crime and identifying ways that we improve our processes and efficiencies so that we can reduce crime and do it in a constitutional manner and in a way where we strengthen our relationship and involvement of the community.
Let's talk, if we can, Chief, about revenue, because obviously Oakland has its problems with dwindling coffers, and the rank and file in the police numbers have decreased and diminished, and I'm sure that William Breton may come in and say, you need more police. Where do you get the money from?
Well, first of all, I want to say that we appreciate the council last night supporting this initiative. The council, the mayor, and the city administrator have been strong supporters of the police department hiring more officers. We have an academy class that is in session right now that will graduate in March, actually March 22nd. on March 25th, another academy will start, and we're planning another academy in September.
Yeah, forgive me, but those were also on the agenda last night.
Yes.
So you're optimistic about increasing the police force in numbers?
Yes, I am. And that's part of the solution, right? We need more officers. We also need a better crime-fighting strategy. We don't have a citywide crime strategy. And that's something that the city council has asked for in the past. That's something that the chief feels that he is responsible for. And by hiring these outside consultants, that will put us in a position where we can implement a long-term crime-fighting strategy as well as a short-term plan.
But these consultants come in for only 6 months. They're paid handsomely, and the fact of the matter is that Anthony Bratton has become kind of a star figure in terms of consultancy. He's wanted, I shouldn't say wanted, that sounds like he's a fugitive or something. Bill Bratton, excuse me, is certainly in demand throughout the country. There's been, you know, some pretty serious statistics that have come before the public. The East Bay Express, for example, talks about a very low clearance rate, solving less than 30% of the city's homicides, and police just not being available. What's going to change, do you think? I mean, what are your hopes in terms of what kind of difference, dramatically or otherwise, in the short term, Bratton's going to make, or the long term?
Okay, well, a couple of points. First of all, it's important to remember that Oakland only has one chief, and that's Howard Jordan, and that Chief Bratton is a subcontractor. He has no executive authority. He's going to make recommendations to the primary consultant, Bob Wasserman, and then it's the chief's responsibility to consider these recommendations and then implement them. Now, with Chief Bratton and several other consultants that come along with him bring a wealth of experience and expertise. They're going to help us navigate through ways of improving how we reduce crime and increase public confidence. It's important to remember that this is not going to be a cookie-cutter approach. They are going to come into Oakland. They are going to work with the police department. They're going to meet with the community. They're going to meet with city staff, and they are going to be making recommendations that they believe are specific to Oakland, that are sensitive to the community's need, that are constitutionally sound, and give us the best opportunity to have sustainable, long-term crime reduction, as well as enhancing our partnership with the community.
Let me just ask you, if I may, though, about the fiscal situation. There's been a good deal of criticism over the fact that well over 40% of the municipal budget goes to pay police. The contracts suggest that there's maybe some excessive pay, as some citizens see it, unaffordable pension benefits. All of this seems to work against you or not?
Well, I think there are factors, that they're budgetary factors and considerations. Some of these are outside the police department's control. Some of these are issues that are based on agreements with the union and other types of processes. So it is a factor. I mean, $250,000 is a significant amount of money. Hence part of the lively debate. But we're looking at what the long-term benefit is to this. We have staffing challenges. Last year there was an increase in crime, and we need to find a way to reduce crime and to strengthen our relationship with the community.
Again, you've been listening to Anthony Toribio, who's Assistant Chief of Police, the Oakland Police Department. I want to bring Noel Gallo into this, Councilman and Head of Public Safety Committee with the Oakland City Council. And Noel Gallo, how do we assess the fact that in the past, as I said, there has been little success with consultants being brought in? Just in 2012 alone, over $1 million with policing consultants, and really not much in the way of results. What would lead you to believe this will be any different?
Well, you know, you know what we're doing, Michaels. We seem to talk more about, you know, in some ways ideology, administratively, consultants, but we don't really, you know, address the number one issue that Oakland is facing today, and that's crime. And that's serious. That's where I live. And the voters that elected me recently said to me very clearly, from door to door, from the middle class white professional families down to international, where prostitution's out of control. My grandmothers can't walk down to the neighborhood store any longer, because not only they stopped carrying their purses because they're being mugged, beat up, hassled. So they're basically telling me they're prisoners in their own homes. Our kids, you know, we're afraid to send them to our parks, you know, and so forth. And our teenagers are losing their lives.
Does this, cover all parts of Oakland?
Yeah.
There,
so, and we need to stay. You know, that.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I just had a question to direct to you.
That's what we're here today, going through this issue. And I welcome all the different opinions and voices, and what we had last night at the city council. And beforehand, what we're going to have even more so afterwards is that public debate, public engagement, that all of us, whether you're on the left or on the right, are going to have to come together and address that serious issue.
All right. Councilman Gell, I have a direct question for you, though, if you'll indulge me. I want to know if what you're saying, because it doesn't resonate with a lot of people. You say this covers all areas of Oakland. There are some who feel that those who are right in the direct firing line, so to speak, in the heart of the city or in the main flatlands and so forth, are suffering a great deal more with crime than... Yeah, I know that's where you live, and that's why I'm saying there are those who say up in the Oakland Hills they're not, or in Rock Ridge and other areas, really enduring what those of you in the flatlands are.
Right. Well, you know, I'm trying to save lives. Both of youngsters that are committing the crime and those that, you know, they're offending and hurting, assaulting and killing people. So for me, that's the ultimate goal. Now, in terms of the consultants coming into Oakland, you're absolutely right. You know, crime has governed Oakland for too long. There is no safety strategy that we can address within our neighborhoods that we can, you know, implement, whether it's curfews, gang injunctions, stop and frisk, you name it. There are a number of tools that, you know, that we made available to our police chief to implement if that's what he feels is necessary to do to make sure that our kids and families are safe in their neighborhoods.
And there was really no strategic plan for safety, was there?
No, there isn't. There isn't. I think that's what, you know, the confusion that happens and the lack of trust that happens in our homes towards the police department, towards the mayor, towards the city leadership, because every other day, you know, it's a different tactic. Every other day, the numbers change. First, you know, it's two gangs doing it. No, it's not two gangs doing it. No, we're going to do curfews. No, we're not going to do curfews. We're doing cease and fire. But, you know, I don't know, we're doing the Boston model of cease and fire. So people are confused. They just want us to deal with the crime issue and deal with it today and quit talking about it.
So how do you know this isn't just another attempt at a quick fix?
Well, you know, for me, it's one is the individuals, the Wasserman groups, they're highly professional, have experience. They've demonstrated results throughout the country and not just, you know, in L.A. or New York City. I think that if Oakland's going to change and deal with the issue of safety in a clean city, we're going to have to do that immediately because we're losing families. Families are leaving Oakland, and at the same time, businesses are moving out and don't want to relocate here. So I want to be able to hire my young people so they can get off the streets. But the only way I do that, I have to bring businesses into Oakland because government's role is not to be an employment center, and we can no longer do that. So I need businesses to come here. So I need to provide a safe, clean neighborhood for my families to live.
And I need to interrupt you because we're coming up on a break, and I want to give out the phone number for listeners to join us. You can do that now, toll free, 866-733-6786. We welcome your call, so feel free to join the program. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website. Post any questions or comments you have there, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. We'll try to bring you into the conversation, so feel free to join us. Again, it's toll-free, 866-733-6786, or go to our Facebook page if you like. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The Oakland City Council voted early this morning at about 2 a.m., 7-1, to hire former LAPD Police Chief Bill Bratton as a crime consultant. He used to head the Los Angeles and New York Police Departments, and he saw a double-digit reduction in crime during his tenure. Such practices as stop and frisk and zero-tolerance policies have created a great deal of controversy, although certainly they have been, particularly stop and frisk was off the table from the beginning, but officials are concerned that these would be implemented or other severe kinds of police methods will be implemented in Oakland. But others feel that it's time to try whatever needs to be tried to bring down violence. And in fact, here's a councilwoman, Lynette Gibson McElhaney, who voted in favor of bringing Chief Bratton in. Here's what she had to say.
And so, Chief, I don't believe that I can tell you to get your job done and then tell you how to do it. So your job's on the line and your reputation is on the line. If you say that this is the team you need, then I'm ready to vote on that.
Now, that's what she said last evening, obviously, to Police Chief Jordan. And remind you that we spoke earlier with Mathai Kuruvilla, who is a staff writer covering the Oakland City Hall for San Francisco Chronicle. We have with us for the rest of the segment, Rachel Herzig, who's co-director of Critical Resistance, an Oakland group that's opposed to and continues to be opposed to the hiring of Bill Bratton, and Noel Gallo, I've been saying Gallo, and it should be pronounced Gallo, so my apologies, Councilman and head of the Public Safety Committee with the Oakland City Council. We're going to bring your calls into this, and in fact, before I do that, though, I'd like to raise a question with you, Councilman Gallo, and that is, to what extent does the Riders' police brutality settlement play into the responsiveness on this whole question of the OPD? Has the settlement tied officers up or otherwise had impact on, well, their ability to fight crime?
Well, you know, I just need to recognize that there are some individuals within our police units that need to be replaced, need to be trained, and so forth. So I recognize that. All right. But in terms of, there are some officers that would tell you they're the ones that are being handcuffed. So they're more concerned about saving their job, protecting their job, than as opposed to doing their job and dealing with crime on the streets. There's a great deal of intimidation on both sides. But the bottom line is you have, Joe Citizen that's paying his taxes, worked all his life, minding his own business, following the rules, and, they're trying to make their, enjoy their lives. We're allowing some individuals that are making poor choices, don't respect the law, and are violating other people's constitutional rights, and So we just got to be real aggressive, assertive to it and deal with the issue at hand. And that's, we're killing people, out of control. And at the same time, no one ever talks about the number of shootings that occurred in Oakland. Now, it depends on what law enforcement group you talk to. Some will tell you there was over 800 shootings in Oakland alone last year. Now, those are 800 people that could have died. And then we would have been, singing a different story. So the issue in Oakland is serious, and we have to take it head on.
All right. I want to get to our callers, but first let me go back to Rachel Herzig. Rachel, got a listener here who says your activist guest, I presume that's you, betrays how out of touch they are with the truly remarkable progress of New York and Los Angeles in community policing. I lived in both cities during Bratton's 10 years. To me, he is a hero, and I don't believe in heroes. Every sane resident in Oakland should be rejoicing today. What would you say to that?
I would say what I said earlier, which is that I think there are aspects of the community that really works for and that Bratton really appeals to. And I don't deny that. I think that he does a very good job of appealing to certain sectors of our communities. And our experience has shown that the people who are most directly in the line of fire of his policies often are not consulted at all and tend to feel like their communities are more fractured, more destabilized as a result of his policies. So I don't doubt that he's appealing to some people. He wouldn't be, as popular as he is or make as much money as he does every year if he weren't popular among some.
But you are not rejoicing like that listener here today.
No, I don't think he's a hero. I think that his policies are really, really destructive. And I don't rejoice when I think about him as a consultant.
Let me go back to the assistant chief for a moment before I go to your call. Anthony Toribio, Robert writes, to start to reduce violence, the OPD must change and become a friend of the people rather than the adversarial stance they now have. They need to stop their violence. And you would say what to that gentleman?
I would say that we have come a long way towards strengthening our relationship with the community. Earlier, there was discussion about the negotiated settlement agreement, and I want to make this point. The negotiated settlement agreement has three goals. One is accountability at the police department, from supervisors to commanders. Secondly, to ensure that the police department is engaged in constitutional policing. And lastly, that we strengthen our relationship and trust with the community. And the consultant work goes hand in hand with that. The goal of the consultants is to help us increase accountability, help us reduce crimes, and do it in a constitutional manner. And then lastly, strengthen our relationship with the community and their involvement so that we have sustainable crime reduction and that we have a citywide plan to accomplish that.
And let me bring Bob Jackson on. He's a bishop at Full Gospel Church of God in Christ in Oakland. And Bishop Jackson, thank you for joining us. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be a part of the program this morning.
And are you one of those rejoicing over the decision by the council last night?
No, I'm not really rejoicing about it. I will rejoice when I see the reduction in crime and the reduction in homicides and the reduction in the shootings that we've been experiencing for the past I don't know how many years. That's when I'll rejoice, when lives are being saved and people are no longer dying at the rate they've been dying and people are not being wounded and they're shot up, you know, and innocent people being killed and the streets of Oakland are made safe for children to go to and for to school and for seniors and older people and others to enjoy the freedom and liberty they should enjoy in their community. That's when I'll rejoice.
You've also made, I believe, some statements to the effect that it wasn't so much the African-American community who was opposed or who were opposed in large numbers to Chief Bratton. It was coming more from, well, white people.
Well, when I went down last Tuesday, not last night, but last week, to the Public Safety Committee, that's what I saw, a tremendous amount of white people crying out about racial profiling and what Bratton's going to do and et cetera, et cetera. And I just thought that was just kind of strange for me. I didn't see a whole lot of black people saying anything about it or opposing him coming or going.
But you did last night, didn't you? There were a lot of black people testifying last night against this.
Certainly there was, because I raised the bar to a lot of black people in the community that you should come down and speak for yourself and not let white people who probably don't even live in your community speak up for you what's best for your community. I think it's time for black people to speak up for their own community and say what's good for themselves, you know what I'm saying, in their community, and not let other people. We've done that for too long.
I wonder what you say, though. Here, I'm looking at an email here, and I want to get our callers on here, but here's Glenn from Oakland who says, "This is an African-American crime on African-American problem. Others are only impacted by the crossfire. Why don't the African-American leaders just tell their African-American neighbors in Oakland to stop the violence? Why don't Oakland African-American leaders call out their Oakland African-American neighbors to stop the violence? And why don't Oakland's African-American citizens call out their neighbors for bad behavior?"
Well, we certainly have been doing that. I've been pastoring this church for 29 years. All 29 years I've been doing that. We go out into the communities every month knocking on doors in the worst areas, praying with the people and ministering to the people. But we have a real problem in our city, and it's centered around a lot of things. I mean, Bratton is not going to be the solution for the problem by himself. But we have a lot of problems, and the problems, the schools are inferior. They're not educating African-American kids. We have just the whole climate of the homes, you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of things that's out of control in the city, and we're working on all of them. But right now, when you look at, as Mr. Gallo said just a while ago, and I certainly agree with him, we had 131 murders last year. We had 555 wounded. So when people ask about the churches and what did the churches do, if we weren't praying like we're praying for God to bless and save these people and to spare their lives, I believe we would have something like 686 murders last year alone and 23 murders to this date. I believe it's the 23rd of the day of January. So it would have been one person killed for each day. And if that's not alarming or arresting to anybody, it certainly is to me and the families that's being impacted by this carnage that's going on in the community. So if a Bill Bratton, and this is what I said last night, can come up with a strategy that's going to abate these problems, especially the murders and the wounded, I'm for anybody that's got a solution, because right now no one has a solution.
Well, what about spending $250,000 for programs for youth or for job training or for schools and libraries? So the argument goes, that might help the violence problem, mightn't it?
What good is the libraries and what good is the schools if the streets are not safe for the kids to go back and forth to schools and to the schools and to the libraries?
All right. Let me bring our callers on. Been waiting patiently, and I want to get to them. Max, you're first up. Hi.
Hey, how you doing? I was at the meeting last night until 2:45 a.m., watched the whole thing go down. Basically, my take on this is Oakland needs more cops. We need crime suppression, but Bratton's a red herring. He basically just makes a mess. There were three other pro-policing measures that passed last night with minimal opposition, and the problem with Bratton is that he's a rallying cry for Oakland's lunatic fringe radicals, and that he's unnecessarily expensive. Basically, he's got subordinates who work for him who could do the same job he does without creating anywhere near as much controversy, and they wouldn't cost as much. So what I see here is the same sort of polarization that Oakland usually sees getting exacerbated when we should be just moving forward with common sense, incremental steps towards fixing our violent crime problem. And that just basically means hiring more police and making sure that we keep up with our violence prevention measures as well.
All right. Thank you, Max, for that statement. I appreciate it. We'll let it stand, and we'll get some more of your calls on. We'll go to Hugh next. Hugh, you're on.
Thank you for the program. Thank you to Bishop Jackson and Noel Gallo, who I support both, and Bishop Jackson's many programs he is well known for out of Axville. The reason I called is just to let you know, Michael, that crime is happening in the hills. We know it's not as bad as the flatlands. It's of a lesser nature, but we're all exposed to it to some degree, and we feel for our brothers and sisters in the flatlands. And it has us on edge, unnecessarily exasperating economic, class, and race tensions occasionally. So another good reason why crime will benefit us all and the diversity that is in Oakland. I'd also like to add that it is also stacking the deck when Critical Resistance and Occupy Oakland call for their guests to attend these meetings. They've done so repeatedly. They did so first, and they've been doing so since the 1960s when Critical Resistance was formed and associated with selling weapons to those who kill police officers. Now, I'm sure your guest from Critical Resistance will deny some of
She's
that.
She's shaking her head vigorously in negation of what you just said, put forward.
And just to finish, Chief Bratton's Stop, Investigate, and Frisk, as Matai pointed out, is implemented across police departments. The problems associated with New York is now, and that's 20 years after Chief Bratton left NYPD. The recent problems have nothing to do with him. So, again, thank you to Bishop Jackson and Noel Gallo.
All right. We thank you for that call. Rachel Herzog, let me get a response from you, please.
Sure. I just want to set the record straight. Our organization is 12 years old. We've not been around since the 1960s, and we certainly have no relationship to selling arms to anybody.
Well, there's some critical resistance to critical resistance here. I'm looking at an email from a listener who says, Critical Resistance Group website does not provide information on what their sources of funding are, who their primary board members and trustees are. They do not list. They do list advisory board members. Nearly every member works on prisoner reentry and on behalf of criminal rights. Why are they not representing the rights of victims of violent crime?
Well, I think that's also a misrepresentation. Many of the members of our organization, many of the people involved with us, are victims of violent crime. And one of the things that I think has been sideswept a little bit in this conversation is that I think everybody's really concerned about violent crime and about the murder rate. And there doesn't seem to be any correlation, and I've done a lot of research, between suppression policing or zero tolerance policing and violent crime or the murder rate. And so I think that's something that everybody should be paying some attention to.
Matai said earlier on that there was a stacking of the deck last night by supporters of Chief Bratton's being hired. Did Critical Resistance try to stack the deck in previous meetings?
Well, I don't know that, you know, stacking the deck is quite the parallel in our case, because we are not city council people. We don't have the ability to robocall our district or to send a mass email to every voter in the district. So I think there's a difference in terms of the stacking. I also think when you are a council person, you hold a different level of power. No matter how many people turn out, you can still decide, as we saw last night, to make a different choice, regardless of what your constituents say. So, yeah, certainly, we're a grassroots organization. We do mobilize people. That's our bread and butter, is that we do grassroots mobilizations. So it's certainly true that we try to turn people out. And I think the people who are most afraid often to come to those chambers because their voices are understood as not relevant or not appropriate. And so I think we do create space for them. That's true.
Right, let me bring some more calls on. Mark, join us. Mark, you're on the air.
Yeah, my thought was from the criminal element, we never hear from that side, like what they think. You know, we hear the criminologists and we hear all the nonprofit people who say, well, I think this and think that. Don't hire them, maybe hire them. But I experienced it for myself as a former gang member in South Central Los Angeles that when those police officers are a little more aggressive as far as stopping you and pulling you over and stuff like that, it puts a dent in the crime and it stops it before it happens in a lot of cases. And I noticed since I've been in Oakland only 2 years that the police never pull people over, ever. And I noticed that as soon as I got here.
May I go to you on this, Anthony Toribio?
Yes, I just want to say that, you know, we don't send our officers out there to arbitrarily stop people. We analyze data. We look at crime patterns and trends. We try to identify the individuals that are causing the crime, and we focus our resources on deterring and or apprehending them.
Would you comment also, and let me thank the caller, we'll go to another call here in just a moment, but would you comment, Chief Toribio, on whether there really is a distinct or dramatic difference in terms of crime up in the hills as opposed to the flatlands?
Well, I think crime impacts all of Oakland. It goes beyond race. It impacts the community at a neighborhood level, and it impacts Oakland on a national level in terms of bringing business and tourism into Oakland. So it affects all of Oakland, and we need a citywide strategy to reduce crime, and that is our goal. We need it to be sustainable. We need it to be constitutional. We're sensitive to the concerns of the community, but we need their help and their partnership to make Oakland a safer place to live, work, and do business.
Yeah, I have another listener who says Oakland's crime problems affects the cities around it, including San Francisco, and I think there's an argument to be made there as well. Let me get another Oakland caller on here. Love, is that your name?
That is my name. Thank you for taking my call.
Welcome.
I've lived in Oakland for 12 years, and I love Oakland. I have lived down on the lake, and the police never come, even though people come every night, same person, and it breaks in all of the windows. My car got stolen. They couldn't be bothered to show up. I moved back up to the hills where I was a homeowner for many years, paid a lot of taxes, voted for pro-police measures, voted for after-school programs, voted for every possible thing that could on either side that I thought could help the problem. The point is, put my tax dollars there, but when we have a problem up in the hills, the police don't come. And I will give you a very good example. In the last 2 months, there was someone behind my house crawling around on my deck. I'm a single mother at home with 2 children. I called the police at 1:48 a.m. They assured me the police were on the way. I called at 3. The person was now like right at my back door. The police did not show up. Finally, I made a racket. Thank God they left instead of coming in. The police did not show up until 8:16 in the morning. At that point, I could have been dead, and so could have my children. No one showed up, and I am totally against having guns because I think someone could come steal them and take off of them. But when you're sitting there desperate and the police don't show up before a crime, it makes me think, I know they're busy somewhere else. It's not about suppression of crime. I feel that the only way they're going to come up to my neighborhood is to solve a homicide or something. And that's very extremely frustrating when you lost complete faith in the police system. I mean, I was terrified. I fell asleep with a bat in my hand, and I know I'm not the only one. So it does impact the entire city because any criminal who wants to break into a house knows very well there is no police presence up in the hills.
You do hear this repeatedly, and I'd like your response, Anthony Toribio.
First, sir, I want to apologize to that caller for the delayed service and to all those in the community that have received a delayed police response. But there are several initiatives that the chief is implementing with the support of the city administrator, the mayor, and the council. Last night, for example, the council approved the hiring of 20 civilian technicians that will go into our patrol division to ease the burden on the patrol officers. They will be doing some tasks and assignments that officers are doing now so that they can become more proactive, respond to calls in a more timelier manner, and involve themselves to a greater degree in problem-solving efforts. We are working on a plan to reduce the call volume that our officers have to go to. I mentioned earlier that we are hiring more officers. We've hired more dispatchers to increase their capacity to answer 911 and non-emergency calls. So there are several initiatives that are in progress or that have been implemented to be able to enhance the level of service that the community deserves and that we want to provide.
Well, a quick question for you, Rachel Herzig, from a listener who says, well, I understand Ms. Herzig's concerns. I also am concerned about rising crime, both violent and petty, that is directly affecting my personal safety. What alternative solutions would she suggest if Bratton is not the answer?
That's a great
question. Fair enough question, yeah.
That's a great question. I mean, I think that we've been seeing for the past 3 years a very lively debate in the halls of City Hall and also out on the streets that asks after these trade-offs. And I think we have repeatedly seen that there are already solutions in the community. There are community-based organizations. There are churches. There are services that, if they were given the kinds of resources that go toward policing, probably could do very remarkable things. So, for instance, we've heard from yesterday, we heard from somebody who works with Atzlan Beautification Movement, who's somebody who was named on the gang injunction in East Oakland, who the former city attorney called a bullet magnet and a sociopath. And in his community, he's working with his neighbors. He holds block parties. He's helping create green spaces and gardening projects. He's doing mural projects. And he has said himself that if somebody gave him a chance and believed that he could do something different, that made the change. He said, locking me up, policing me, never made a change. When somebody invested in me, that's when things really started to turn around. And that's just one example.
And you are listening to Forum. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support this radio station, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And on we go to more of your calls. Sarah from Piedmont, you're next. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We've lived in Oakland for many years and loved living there and just moved to Piedmont over the summer for the great schools and supposedly the lower crime rate. And as many as the folks who are listening to this call might know, we had 4 armed robberies in Piedmont just in the last month, which is considerably higher than they've ever had. So it's a growing problem in cities other than Oakland. And so my question is about what the police department, maybe the views of this consultant is in partnering with other local cities to support crime prevention across borders, because clearly crime doesn't have borders and it's happening in other cities other than just Oakland.
Yeah, Anthony Taribio.
Yes, we place a high emphasis on working collaboratively with our neighboring law enforcement agencies. In fact, yesterday Chief Jordan and I were at the ceremony for the new Piedmont Police Chief, Ricky Godie. We communicate regularly with some of our surrounding agencies. For example, we work with Berkeley PD, San Leandro, Emeryville PD. We have the Highway Patrol that are providing patrols in Oakland. Yesterday, the council approved an initiative to have the Alameda County Sheriff's Department provide supplemental patrols in Oakland. We work very closely with them. And I also want to add that we work very closely with some of our federal partners. This past week, the mayor was in Washington, D.C., speaking with some of our federal partners and requesting their assistance. Chief Jordan has made it a priority to engage some of our federal partners. Last year, we had a very large operation with ATF that resulted in a significant number of gun recoveries and arrests. So we are at a day and age where we cannot fight crime alone. We need to work and communicate with our neighboring agencies to share information and at times share resources so that we could be more efficient and effective in combating crime.
And again, Anthony Taribio is the Assistant Chief of the Oakland Police Department. And Todd, you're our next caller. Todd, welcome.
Hi. I want to make sure everybody listening understands that this is not completely OPD's fault. I think our local politicians have put us into this position by laying off police officers in the past, by promising Measure Y money, which was $20 million or more, putting into social programs that had no accountability. I think we just need to understand that this Bratton issue is a short-term solution. But when you look at OPD, and I've done ride-alongs with them, they are short staffed. And so we're in a city where even Howard Jordan has mentioned that you need at least 900 to 1,000 police officers just to help deter crime. And right now we have 240, 250 on the streets at any one time, which is way, way low. So from an Oakland standpoint, we talk about community leadership and everybody being involved, but I think it's our local politicians that have put us in this position over the last several years.
Todd, let me take that point, and Noel Gallo, how do you react to that?
No, you know, I agree with the caller, and I take responsibility, even though I just got on the city council a couple of weeks ago, but he's absolutely right. We've been leadership-less from the mayor to the council all the way down, including, see, I think safety and security in any city is the primary responsibility of a government. But you have to also recognize that every employee within the city government has to be part of the safety strategy plan. So from the park attendant all the way up to the district and administrator, they need to be part of the safety plan and get involved in it. And I think that's where the opportunity lies for Oakland. You know, we are where we are today, but I think the tools that are being implemented, the investments that are being made, and certainly the participation, whether you're one side of the issue or the other, is going to be critical for Oakland to turn the page.
All right, that's where we'll leave it. And I want to thank you, Noel Gallo, councilman and head of the Public Safety Committee for the Oakland City Council. Thanks also to Anthony Toribio, who is Assistant Chief of the Oakland Police Department, and Rachel Herzig, Co-Director of Critical Resistance. We also talked with Mathai Caravillo, the staff writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, who covers Oakland, and Bob Jackson, Bishop of the Full Gospel Church of God in Christ in Oakland. And thank you, our listeners. Wouldn't be here without you. We're here with you every Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Thanks to our senior editor, Dan Zolin, our producers, Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Amanda Stupai, engineer is Danny Bringer, executive producer is Raul Ramirez. For all of us at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.